Welcome to the Conversations Politics podcast. I'm Michelle Grattan. Today we're talking with Michael McCormack, who is seen as a man of the future in the Nationals. He's Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister for Finance and the Member for Riverina in New South Wales. He was previously a journalist and editor of the Daily Advertiser in Wagga, and also a newspaper executive. He's one of a number of former journalists currently or recently in Parliament, most notably, of course, Tony Abbott. Michael McCormack, what is it like moving from being an observer of politics to a participant?
Well, Michelle, you sort of go from being the one of the hunters to being one of the hunted. I can well recall when I was in Year 6 at primary school and we pulled up on the bus out the front of the old Parliament House and Malcolm Fraser was being interviewed on the steps of Parliament House. That was 1976. I thought that would be really cool, and I always wanted to get into politics. I was in debating in high school, and certainly I campaigned for and on behalf of, I suppose you'd say, the voiceless when I was the a journalist and then later the editor of the Advertiser. And it just seemed a natural progression for me to try my hand at politics. Kay Hull, my predecessor, was certainly sounded me out very early in the piece to be able to groom me to put my hand up eventually when the time came for her to retire. Look, I love politics, always have, and I do see it as an extension of what I did as a newspaper journalist to actually campaign on behalf of people and for the sorts of things that that people in my electorate want, need and expect.
That's quite an interesting view of journalism, because of course some would say that as journalists we should be more objective, not campaigners, but you had a different view.
Well, look, I think certainly in the regional areas you need to be a campaigner, because you need to be able to ensure that your region gets its fair share. And whilst journalism is about being objective, and I do think that far too often these days there's opinion masquerading as comment masquerading as news, I do believe that newspapers and radio and television and other forms of media serve a purpose to be able to campaign on behalf of their regions.
So before we move on, what do you think of journalism as it's practiced in the Parliamentary Press Gallery?
Look, I think they do a good job. I think the fact that nowadays the internet has just made it open slow, that the media landscape has changed even since I stopped being a journalist back in 2002, although I don't think it ever really truly leaves your veins. I think there's The great pity is the 24/7 news cycle, and really these days it's almost hour by hour. There's updates, and so many politicians see a camera and run to it, and I think that it actually does get in the way of a serious government bringing about serious reform. We saw that in the Labor years. We certainly have seen it, to some degree in what we've tried to do to get some of those important reforms, to get the budget back in control. We've been stymied at every step of the way because of the Twitterati, because of the Facebook generation, and more's the pity. I think you look at other countries which sometimes are able to practice because of their various media laws and because of the way they do things, can have a vision long into the future, whereas it seems sometimes here that it's the news cycle dominates policy.
Politics seems to be in a particularly nasty phase at the moment, which doesn't go down well with many voters. Is the disillusionment particularly noticeable in the country and regional areas, do you think?
Look, I think probably some people have a misconception of politics too. I mean, I know from my own experience, when I do social media, I only ever do positive stuff. This is who I'm seeing. This is what I'm trying to do. I don't try and get into the day-to-day nitpicking of what Labor's doing and its failings. I try and always be positive about what we're doing and what we're achieving, and I think we've had some good outcomes. And I think generally, I don't think people see the fact that, people from both sides of politics on a whole actually get on with each other, and sometimes I've sat in question time and it's been for the 67 of the 70 minutes it's been quite a good discussion, and then for 3 minutes it goes feral, and of course that's what grabs the headlines. That's what makes the nightly news grab. That's what makes the 4 o'clock radio grab. And more's the pity. I think quite often there's a bipartisanship that isn't seen out there in general voter land.
When you move around the streets of Wagga or wherever, do you find though that people are reacting negatively, are saying, what are you all doing there, and are you all exploiting your entitlements, and other bad feedback?
Yes, you do get that element, and that's a shame, because I don't think people realise how hard people on both sides actually work, and I don't quite often see the fact that some of the outcomes that we do achieve for our electorates are ever publicised. And I'll give you a good example. The other day, $263 million worth of on-farm water infrastructure was rolled out in the Riverina, in particularly in Collyambly and Leeton and Griffith and those sorts of places. That gained two paragraphs on page 3 of the local newspaper. But you get a small business which might be shutting down and which might be laying off 5.5 workers, that'll make front page headlines, and it's the local politician's fault. And of course that negativity does play out in people's perception of how you do your job. And when they do see the grabs on the nightly news of the front bench of the government and the front bench of the opposition going at each other's throats, people do tend to look at all politicians, backbenchers right through, and say, what are you doing there? You're acting like petulant children.
Now, last week the Nationals were in the news because some Liberals were unhappy that you were invited into the party room to be part of that debate about same-sex marriage. Where do you personally stand on this issue?
I'm for retaining the Marriage Act as it stands now, but I'm actually pleased that people are going to be given a vote and to have their say. It's too important issue not to be able to do that now. Look, I have to say, when I go throughout my electorate, it's not top of mind issue for all people. It is something that the media is obsessed by. But mind you, jobs, security of water, petrol prices, cost of living pressures, they're the sorts of things that are occupying people's attention in my electorate. But given the fact that there has been so much airplay of the same-sex marriage issue, and given the fact that Parliament seems to be quite divided on it, and indeed our coalition seems to be quite divided on it, I think it's a good thing that it is going to go to the people. A lot of people forget too that Labor on this particular issue are also very divided. People forget that the five members of the Labor lower house who really do not want to see the Marriage Act changed, they face expulsion if Labor take a binding position on this, and that's why Labor is so keen to push the conscience vote. Given that seems to be off the table now, given the fact that it's going to the people, I just hope when it does go to the people that it's a compulsory vote, so that we don't see an Irish situation. We don't see, and I would hate to see that it becomes too divisive, and I really don't see that it should be, the only election issue that is going to be pushed by those people within the Labor Party who seem to think that this is the be-all and end-all.
Would you like to see a referendum or a plebiscite?
Well, look, I think the legal people with expertise in this matter are working that out as we speak, and I think that's a good thing. So whatever they decide, I just hope that it is a compulsory vote, and that the question is very carefully worded so that it doesn't get skewed one way or the other.
As you move around the electorate, what issues are coming through, and what mood do you find towards the government?
Well, look, just after the budget, the May budget, the mood was very good, and certainly when you spoke to farmers, they were very pleased with the fence write-off, the 100% they could replace their fences and get a 100% write-off. Small business, which is the engine room of the Riverina economy, certainly the engine room of the nation, they were very pleased at the instant asset write-off up to $20,000 and multiple times. They were very, very pleased. That issue, of course, got or the whole budget was taken over by Bill Shorten putting in his same-sex marriage bill. More's the pity, because it was a good budget. After last year's necessarily tough budget, we didn't get too much of a honeymoon period on this year's budget, and that was a shame, because it was a good budget and people were talking about it. But look, the issues that are top of mind of people, as I say, water rights, certainly petrol prices, health, those are the sorts of things NBN rollout. They're the important things that are vitally crucial to people in the Riverina.
Just on the communications issue, I think there are still many spots in the country where the mobile phone coverage is terrible. Do you think that more needs to be done on that area?
Oh, look, absolutely. And look, Labor didn't have any policy whatsoever on this. We rolled out $100 million for the program to put in towers. And look, I was glad that the Riverina got some of those towers. Look, you could have spent $100 million in the Riverina and perhaps still had some mobile black spots. So look, but it's a good start. It is a start. And certainly we've got a round two is in the drawing board, on the drawing board now, and that's a good thing. But we do need to do more. We do need to make sure that not just for convenience but also for safety aspects that we go to more mobile black spot towers right across the regional areas, because that's where a lot of our income is derived. That's where a lot of our balance of payments is very much helped by. And people need to understand that, metropolitan people need to understand that country people deserve good services just like there are in inner city areas.
The government this week's move to limit the opportunity for those not directly affected to challenge mining projects. What impact will this have on farmers? Because this has been obviously an issue of concern to farmers in some areas. And will they be negative about this latest move?
Well, I think the thrust of the legislation is designed to stop people being far removed, hundreds of kilometres away, if not thousands of kilometres away, sabotaging projects such as the Adani Carmichael mine. And look, farmers in the nearby vicinity of a proposed mining site, they need to be able to put their hand up and say, look, we object. Our area is going to be affected by this. We don't want our underground aquifers affected by this. We need to be able to do something through the courts to make sure that due process is followed. But I think the pressure with the legislation is now going to be back in Labor's hands, and whether they want to, as they have a want to do, protect their green votes in inner city areas, or whether they want to protect workers. And let me tell you, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of workers who are going to be affected if some of these big mining projects are stalled, are stopped by those green groups, who quite frankly would stall and stop any project going ahead, because that's what they do. They're guilty of industrial sabotage. They're guilty of stopping workers from actually having the right to work.
Well, Barnaby Joyce, your own deputy leader, is trying to stop a big mining project in his electorate. What's your view on that one?
Well, look, we're a bit, our hands are a bit tied on that, and certainly I know Greg Hunt, the Environment Minister, has put very stringent steps in place to make sure that the biodiversity, that the environmental implications are very much protected. Look, we have part 15 of a 17-step process, and that is all with that Shenhua project. And we've certainly made sure that we followed through to the nth degree of the letter of the law to make sure that the due process was followed.
Would you like to see it stopped, though, if it could be?
I can understand Barnaby's position on this, yes.
Now, you spoke earlier about reform and some of the difficulties of reform. Do you think that the government can go into the election with a broad tax reform agenda?
Look, it's going to be interesting, and elections are usually lost, not won. They are usually won by opposition's campaigning negatively. But I think Tony Abbott has made it quite clear that anything that we bring to government will be put to the people, and we've certainly followed through on many of our objectives that we took to the 2013 election. We said that we would repeal the carbon tax. We did. We said that we would end the mining tax. We have. And we said that we would stop the boats. They've stopped. And so I think if we are to take a tax reform agenda, albeit it might be controversial, then that would be clearly enunciated to the electorate before the next election.
What about industrial relations reform? A few months ago on a Sunday, I happened to be in the town of Narandra, which is in your electorate.
And beautiful town.
I noticed a sign in a cafe saying that it wasn't open because of penalty rates. Would lowering penalty rates on Sundays help employment in these country towns? And do you think it would be electorally successful or electorally acceptable to people?
Well, the short answers to both of those questions are yes and yes. But we need to be very careful that we that anything that we do, we clearly enunciate to the electorate prior to the wider electorate, that is the nation, prior to actually enacting it. We need to make sure that small businesses, and as I said before, they are the engine room of the economy, aren't stymied by laws which prevent them from trading and from opening on weekends. But we also need to make sure that workers receive fair compensation for their labours.
Because a lot of people might only work a Sunday, so they would lose quite a lot.
And they would lose quite a lot. And I can understand the need for penalty rates. I can understand the need for people to be fairly compensated for working on those days, which, be they public holidays, be they weekends. There is an even balance there somewhere. I don't think it's being reached at the moment. But whatever we do, we need to make sure that it is palatable, that it is fair, and that we don't get unfair union bashing and this work choices dogma that has hovered overhead, and whenever we suggest that we need to revisit this and look at this, of course we get work choices shoved down our throats, and that's not the case. But we need to just be sensible, so that if people are visiting towns such as Narandra and want to pull up and have a cup of coffee, that the shop is open.
Now, obviously, the government's been behind in the polls for a very long time. What do you think are the main things that it needs to do to improve its stocks? What are the big two or three things?
Well, look, I think we've had a good week this week talking about jobs and national security. Whenever we talk about the core political business that we are good at, and that is jobs, that is national security, that is getting on with the job of being economically responsible, that's when people have confidence in us. When we get sidetracked with issues which are diversionary tactics put up by Labor, we don't do so well. Look, I'm not a big believer in the polls. I think they're important from the notion that city journalists put them up and say, oh, this is dreadful. I must admit, I've been...
Didn't you run them in the Advertiser?
No, we didn't. And look, and I have to say, I've always asked people when they say, oh, the polls are dreadful, they might pull me up in Baylor Street, they might in Wagga Wagga, they might pull me up in, in Tumut or in Gundagai or tomorrow. I always say to people, have you ever been polled? I've only ever had one person in all of my years of being involved in newspapers, in the media, in politics, that has ever told me that they've actually been polled. So I think they do the polling in Paddington, Newtown or Kooyong. I don't know whether they quite do the polling in downtown Griffith or Luton or Hilston.
I think they are national polls.
Sure they are, but look, it depends on how the question's put to the person being polled. It depends on the mood of the day, and quite frankly, I don't take too much score in what the polls are saying. I think that the smart people, the silent majority, know that we are doing a good job. They know that we have said that we are going to or are doing what we said we would do, and we don't want to go back to the misery and the incompetence that was Labor for six sorry years.
You're spoken of as someone who's likely to get a leadership position at some stage. What are your aspirations? When a vacancy comes up, will you run for leader or deputy?
Oh, look, I take politics one day at a time, and look, you're only ever perhaps one bad doorstop interview away from oblivion in this job. You really, and look, at the end of the day, you are quite frankly answerable to the people who vote for you. I want to do a good job for the Riverina first and foremost. I'm doing my absolute level best to do a good job in my portfolio, which is finance, which is answerable to Matthias Cormann, and I have certain large responsibilities in that field, and I'm endeavouring to do my very best.
I think you'd criticise me journalistically if I didn't push you a bit on that and say you're not ruling out a tilt at some stage.
Oh, look, at the moment, Warren Truss is the most trusted leader.
We're talking about when a vacancy comes up, not trying to knock
off
a
leader. Well, Warren has put his hand up again for pre-selection for the seat of Wide Bay. I'm very pleased that he's done that.
Do you think he will actually contest the next election?
I believe he will, yes. Warren as well. He's performing well in question time. He's always... there's no minister across his brief more than Warren Truss. And look, we might revisit things at a point in time in the future when the leadership comes up for review. But we have some very, very good, solid people in the National Party, and I'm sure that the direction of the National Party is in very good hands. We've got a fantastic leader in Warren Truss, a fantastic deputy in Barnaby Joyce. Luke Hartzicker is one of the most underrated, but a very, very good politician, doing a fantastic job as Assistant Minister for Employment. Fiona Nash doing some great things in the health front, and certainly trying to eradicate the scourge of ice, which is taking such a dreadful toll in regional areas. And the Aboriginal Affairs Minister, Senator Nigel Scullion, a great minister. And you look at my Parliamentary Secretary colleague, Darren Chester, doing some good things in defence. So look, we're going to be well served into the future as far as leading the National Party on any front, and I'm just looking forward to continuing to serve in Warren Truss's team.
Do you think the National Party has a rather different style of politics from that of the main parties?
Well, we don't leak for a start. I mean, we have some very, very interesting discussions in the National Party room, which don't leak. Even staff members aren't privy to what goes on in the National Party room. That is a great thing. I mean, we talk about things, we decide things, and amongst the 21 members of the National Party, the lower house and the Senate, what we decide in that room does not get out of that room, and that's a very, very good thing.
In general, is it a little less confrontational in its style?
No, I tell you what, we get in that party room and we have our differences
among each other. I mean,
but when we do, we certainly resolve them, and it's all forgotten once we leave the room. But I think the National Party is very confrontational when it needs to be. Have a look at GrainCorp. Have a look at pushing for the 1500 gigalitre cap on water buyback. The sorts of things that we push back on, we often get our way because we do have a great leader in Warren Truss. We do have a person in Barnaby Joyce who is prominent in national political circles and respected in national political circles. And the quiet achievers such as Luke Hartzicker and those others I mentioned, a great National Party whip in Mark Colton. The sorts of people who are solid, very, very solid politicians, that we get our way when we need to get our way, but we are a very good coalition partner as well.
Just finally, your Parliamentary Secretary to Matthias Cormann, what have you learnt from him in the time you've worked with him?
Well, speaking of good, solid politicians, Matthias Cormann is just that. And he certainly expressed to me the view to, when making my decisions, always to clearly look at both sides of the policy, both sides of the perhaps an act of grace or a property divestment that I have responsibility for. I'm also responsible for Commonwealth servant superannuation, for risk management processes of the government, and to clearly look at both sides reach a decision after carefully thinking it through. And I think that's the Matthias Cormann style. It's to be reliable, to push the government's agenda of good fiscal responsibility, and they're the sorts of things that he impresses upon me and I try to do each and every day.
Michael McCormack, thanks for talking with The Conversation, and that's all from the podcast today. Thanks to my producer, Matt Dawson. We'll be back with another interview very soon.